Episode 3, Peripheral Economic Models. Today's podcast is a continuation of podcasts based on the comparative study of 100 Shades of the European Union by Giuseppe Celi, Valentina Petrovic and Veronika Sulshova-Salminen, supported by the Transform Europe Foundation and Rosa Luxemburg Foundation. The study took a deeper analytical look at today's economic problems in the two peripheries of the EU. What characterises them? As we've already indicated, the South and the East have different histories, including modern ones. While no country in Southern Europe has had a state socialist experience or even an experience of post-communist transition, many of them share with the East the historical experience of political discontinuity, i.e. the transition from different forms of authoritarian regimes to democratic ones. However, economic continuity has not spared the Southern countries or economic problems associated with a dependent economic model. Of course, the Southern European economic model is not the result of the rapid and accelerated transformation of the 1990s, i.e. the transition from state socialism to the market or capitalism. It is, however, the result of the interaction between integration into the EEC economic system, i.e. economic integration, and the gradual neoliberalisation of the European economy that has gained momentum since the beginning of the 1990s. Southern European economies went through a crucial economic upheaval in the 1970s, resulting in several economic problems and political changes. For most countries in Southern Europe, their Europeanisation meant a break with industrialisation and premature trade liberalisation, which reinforced deindustrialisation. Excessive service sector growth, financialisation and an increased financial and banking sector role in the economy and economic development accompanied deindustrialisation. Financialised growth based on loans from mostly German or French banks leads to dependence on capital from the core. In the case of Cyprus and Malta, local financialisation is based on tax haven mechanisms and tourism. Tourism has also become an essential service sector in the case of Spain, Portugal and Italy. As a result of these processes, the recent economic model of the southern periphery is based on limited production, low technology and low value-added sectors dominated mainly by small firms that have trouble standing up to competition based on product and price. These structural weaknesses lead to a stagnant economy and an increase in low-paid and precarious work, which translates into defects in the domestic market. Where relevant, growing competition from the eastern periphery, which has integrated into the EU mainly as an industrial appendage of Germany and its industry, has contributed to the problems of the southern European economy since the 1990s. Paradoxically, this competitive process has not brought the European periphery any long-term advantages or a stable economic model. On the contrary, it has led to a considerable dependence on the central countries, especially Germany and its direct investments. But another paradox is that the process of eastward enlargement of the EU has strengthened the negative tendencies in the southern periphery. This has been detrimental in the long term to the European project, convergence ambitions and promises, and solidarity. It shows the gap between aspirations or rhetoric and the reality of the European neoliberal economy. The EU's eastern periphery has got two types of economic models. Countries such as Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Bulgaria, Croatia and partly Romania, which has also developed productive capacities dependent on foreign direct investment, have relied predominantly on financialisation in the past two decades, similar to countries in the southern flank. In the case of the Baltics, deindustrialisation occurred during the 1990s as a composite part of de-Russification because a large part of the Russian population worked in Soviet-era industry. These small and open economies attracted investment in financial, insurance and real estate services or tourism and built their economic model on a more or less strict monetary policy. The V4 countries lost part of their robust industry in the 1990s. Poland and Hungary took the route of privatisation and attracting foreign investment immediately after 1990. One of the reasons for this was the high foreign debt of both countries. The Czech Republic and Slovakia first tried to build national capitalism through voucher privatisation. After the economic crisis in 1998, they embarked on the path of foreign direct investment like their two neighbours. This turnaround strengthened the race to the bottom and the rise of what Jan Drukopol has described as the state of competition. The early 1990s in the Central European region suggests some deindustrialization trends. In the context of FDI, there was a halt to this process and eventually some strengthening of the economy's industrial base. But all of this was mainly due to foreign capital. The main comparative advantages of Central Europe have been cheap and skilled labour, effectively a legacy of state socialism, geographical proximity, especially to Germany, and the long-standing favourable tax and social policies of these states, which have long been accommodating the demands of large multinational firms. Slovenia followed a specific path of gradual transition, not embarking on a significant privatisation sell-off and trying to retain domestic capital in the high-tech sectors. Comparatively, we find that both the South and the East of the EU face similar problems of dependence on the capital from central or core countries of the EU. In the case of the South, the reliance on the financial sphere is dominant, due to the financialisation of these economies with financial loans mainly from the core countries France and Germany. The 2008 financial crisis exposed this systemic weakness of the southern European economies to the complete and also started their divergence process. In the case of the eastern countries, this is a dependency through direct foreign investment, but also in the financialisation sphere. Incidentally, the countries of the EU's eastern wing have the highest proportion of foreign ownership of the banking sector worldwide, which is again a symptom of their dependent position, namely their lack of domestic capital. The financial crisis of 2008 was not without adverse effects on the eastern periphery, notably a significant slowdown in the convergence trends and the exposure of the risks of dependence on exports to Germany or foreign investment inflows for economic growth. The status of labour, the question of wages and wage convergence, the model of cheap labour in the East and precarious labour in the South is a separate chapter, and this is what our next episode will be about.